as a committee, and we have a couple of, so we won't approve the minutes. Let me just a little housekeeping issue, which is still a few of you that I haven't had a chance to meet with individually, so just want to extend that invitation again to please talk to Lauren and get on the calendar with me, and again, the purpose is to make sure that we're paying attention to your priorities and the social issues that you might want to have this committee consider. I do want to just say one thing. We are going to have a couple of housing tours coming up. One of them is going to be, we're going to be visiting the shelters, and we're probably going to do an evening meeting, and I would be interested in ensuring that as many of you as possible can come to that. The best time to go to a shelter is in the evening, apparently, so we'll be doing in the metro area here probably, and maybe we'll try to, if we, depending on the timing, maybe we can get out at least to one of our nearby suburbs. And so I'm interested in your suggestions about that.
I'm thinking out loud. Last winter, I came with Catholic Charities, and we went to the feeding program at, help me with names, and then we moved,
Dorothy Day.
And then we moved through two facilities at Catholic Charity, transitional and then an interim housing project, and it was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. Well, good.
And it worked.
Thank you. Maybe Brooke is arranging that, if you want to share with her the place you thought were most...
couldn't even remember the names.
You did pretty well. And we're also going to be touring, we're meeting with the commission, we're going to be touring some affordable housing places that are not, well, kind of the spectrum. We'll be hearing more about that today. I think that probably will be a day tour. We'll see. Maybe we can do it during our committee hearing. But it is a little tricky to try to get everybody's schedule worked out so we can do these evening opportunities. But I ask you to try to work with that. We'll send out maybe the meeting wizard. Are you familiar with the meeting wizard software? It basically gives you two or three choices about when you're available. Then it's an email program. Then you send back to me. And it really helps. So we'll try to work that out. Okay, well, our meeting today is going to be the overview from the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And so, Mr. Marks, you want to come forward and we'll get started. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. You should have a packet that will contain the presentation that I'd like to walk through with you. Okay.
And why don't you introduce yourself, Commissioner, for those who haven't had a chance to meet you yet.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tim Marks, and I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and we now call ourselves Minnesota Housing, and we're very glad to have the opportunity to be with you here today. I've had this position since 2003, and there are a number of you here who are new or who over the last couple of years I have not had the opportunity to meet. And so let me just say that we at Minnesota Housing really look forward to the opportunity to work with you, to tell you about the great work that we think we do and the entire housing community does. Tanya Orr, the Assistant Commissioner of Housing Policy, you'll meet her. She's around the room today. And Megan Ryan is our communications director. So these are some of the staff that you'll be able to work with over the course of this session and in the future. There, just a little bit about myself. I've been a lawyer in private practice most of my career, working with a law firm primarily in St. Paul. I did have a previous opportunity to be in public service as city attorney and then deputy mayor for the city of St. Paul in the mid-1990s. And my purpose here today is to provide you a kind of broad overview of housing in Minnesota and what we at the agency at Minnesota Housing try to do to meet Minnesotans' housing needs. I'm hoping that this is one of several meetings because a lot of the material that we are going to present to you today has a lot of other aspects to it that we can dig deeper with you. As the chair mentioned, we hope that you will take the opportunity to actually see some of the work, including work in your districts, that has really worked to affordably house your constituents. And we welcome the opportunity to lead that. What I'd like you to do is take a look at the materials that are in your packet, and I'm going to kind of walk through these PowerPoint slides and ask you to feel free to interrupt me to speed me up. If you want me to get to some particular points that are of interest to you, and then obviously to take your questions as we go along. But what I'd like to do, just in summary, is to tell you about Minnesota housing record over the last several years, talk about some housing trends and challenges, and then talk specifically about Minnesota housing and its mission, its programs, and how they relate to the authority and the funding that you at the legislature here provide. So with that, I'm going to move to slide two. I think one of the things to be thankful for and to recognize is that in housing in Minnesota, we have a significant and effective group of government partners, philanthropic partners, nonprofit partners, business partners, and faith-based partners that really work effectively together to try to meet Minnesota's affordable housing needs. I talked to several people and a lot of other of my colleagues from across the country visit Minnesota to look at how we do things in Minnesota, and it is remarkably noted as one of the longest-term, most bipartisan, effective coalitions in the area and partnerships in the area of public policy that many have ever seen. And this has been built up over many years, again, through broad bipartisan efforts, my predecessors, your predecessors, to really deliver well on Minnesota's housing needs. And that's really demonstrated because we do have the highest homeownership rate in the country. And we do have a very low percentage nationally in terms of those households that face severe cost burdens in terms of their housing costs. And just over the last 4 years, during some tough times fiscally, we have been through the most significant fiscal crisis in state history, we have made through Minnesota Housing $2.7 billion in investments in affordable housing, assisted 30,000 housing units in terms of construction, rehabilitation, and preservation, and have really launched two nation-leading housing initiatives, the business plan to end long-term homelessness and the effort to increase minority homeownership through the emerging market homeownership effort. Just to slide four now, basically we have two types of programs, and slide four kind of shows some of the numbers that we have developed over the last 4 years in looking at our homeownership programs, where we've invested $1.9 billion, and that's about 58% of our program expenditures, and served 14,000 households. In our multifamily rental programs, we've invested $1.4 billion and serve about 41,000 households per year. So on average, we serve anywhere between 50 and 57,000 households per year in homeownership and multifamily housing. Moving to slide five, you see there a basic summary of our ending long-term homelessness initiative. And in your packet is a two-page summary of the business plan to end long-term homelessness, the first thing in your packet. And we, in 2004, launched a business plan in conjunction with a broad public and private collaboration to end long-term homelessness in Minnesota. And long-term homelessness, those who experience long-term homelessness are a subset of the broader homeless population. And we set forth a business plan to create 4,000 new housing opportunities to end long-term homelessness by 2010. And the good news is that for the first 3 years of the plan, we are ahead of schedule. We wanted to be at 1,000 units by the end of this year, and we are now at 1,091. And so far, we are coming under budget based upon what we had projected for the capital needs of the program. There is still a lot of work to do, a lot of money to be raised to fully fund this effort, but we are very heartened during this time of fiscal crisis in the state. The housing community and the legislature and many others were able to come together and rally behind this plan for those who are most vulnerable. And slide six really shows what this means to real people. And again, this is a targeted effort to address the needs of the long-term homeless. And the first vignette there is from Steve, a 59-year-old veteran who was served by Catholic Charities, who'd been on the streets for 19 years, and now is off the streets in his own apartment in downtown St. Paul and getting his life back together. Sarah, another vignette. who had been homeless off and on for 30 years. Now through the efforts financed through state programs and others, through state programs and others, is now getting her life back together. And I think one of the testaments of this program is many times we have said that we are going to serve the hardest to serve, but because they really are the hardest to serve, we end up serving those who are not perhaps as hard to serve. And this effort, we've been very focused and are getting people off the streets who have been there for as long as 19 years. And that's a great testament to the housing community. The second initiative I'll point to on page 7 is our Emerging Markets Homeownership Initiative. And again, this is a broad statewide collaborative between the industry, homeownership industry, banks, realtors, mortgage brokers, and financial institutions, and community groups. While we have the highest homeownership rate in the nation overall, we have the fifth largest gap between white homeownership and minority homeownership of any state in the country. And we need to focus our efforts to try to bring minority homeownership rates up so that they too can more broadly experience the American dream, build that wealth that often finances college educations and business growth. And we look forward to talking more about that. And in your packet as well is a two-page summary of that specific business plan. So that's much of what we have done over the last 4 years, a very good record of which we are proud and the entire housing community can be proud. And now we're kind of looking at what are the trends as we go forward into the next several years. And for the next several slides, I'd like to talk about some of those trends. The first one is severe housing cost burden. And you will see that in 2000, Minnesota ranked eighth best in the country in terms of severe housing cost burden. And our rank has fallen to 11th, where nearly 12% of our households are now paying 50% or more of their income for housing. The basic trend is that housing prices are increasing at a faster pace than wages. And as a result, we have an affordability gap. And we need to pay constant attention to meeting that affordability gap. And this is evidence that we still have work to do. The next slide, slide 9, basically shows as well for Minneapolis and St. Paul that factor as a result of median house prices, the median household incomes, that ratio is increasing, again, showing that home ownership, particularly to workers who are of low and moderate income, is becoming less affordable in the Twin Cities, and we have to pay attention to that. The next slide, slide 10, I'd like to spend just a couple minutes explaining. And what this shows for a working family making between $40,000 and $45,000 a year, many of those that are in the affordable housing market, what the impact is on their family budgets as they pay 30, 50, and 50% or more of their income on housing. And you see, as they have to pay more for housing, their ability to meet other basic life necessities in food, healthcare, and transportation decreases. Now, at the same time, what occurs is that we have, particularly in the Twin Cities region, but this occurs statewide as well, where we have what we call a jobs and housing and transportation mismatch. And as applied to the Twin Cities region, much of the job growth for low and moderate income workers is concentrated in the 494 and 694 strip. Much of the housing affordable to those workers is concentrated in the inner cities and the far outlying exurbs. As a result, that places burden on individual families' budget who must incur those increased transportation costs, which affects their ability to buy food and pay for health care and meet other needs. Where, in some communities and for some households, they're paying 50 and over 60% of their income combined housing and transportation. So in many ways, our transportation problem is also a housing problem. Because we have not, as a region and as a state, provided sufficient locational choice, dispersed affordable housing throughout the region and throughout the state near jobs. And if we can do better at that, transportation costs go down. The average Twin Cities family now spends more on transportation than the average Los Angeles family. Mm. Commuting times and costs have gone up, and these figures are based upon the recent spike of gas cost increases. So that housing, jobs, and transportation mismatch, particularly for low and moderate income families, is a real burden to which the region and the state must pay attention. The next slide on page 11 basically demonstrates that although there is a softening in the housing market in various sectors of the market, particularly the higher end market, the rental market is tightening at the lower end. So that shows that we still need to pay attention to production of multifamily housing that is for low and moderate income individuals. Slide 12 talks about the foreclosure trends, and we read a lot of data in the trade press and in the popular press now about increasing foreclosures. And this is something which we in the Housing and Community Development Committee must pay a lot of attention to avoid a lot of negative impacts. Elizabeth Ryan from the City of Minneapolis, its housing director, is going to be convening through the Family Housing Fund, a nonprofit group that works a lot in housing in the Twin Cities, to have specific data, specific strategies to really understand what is going on with foreclosure trends so that we can develop very targeted, specific strategies that are targeted to specific identified problems. And we will welcome the opportunity to talk more about that to this committee as time unfolds, but I think it's important to look at it in kind of three different areas. First, you have people who are about in the foreclosure process, who are threatened with foreclosure. They probably need very good financial counseling, perhaps a refinancing product, to determine for their individual circumstances whether they can avoid foreclosure, and if so, how. Second, we have those who are in the homeownership market now, looking to get a new mortgage or a new home equity loan. We have to make sure that there are good products out there, good financial counseling, so that people can make informed decisions. And we know the Department of Commerce, the Attorney General, and others are looking at legislation to make sure that there are good, not predatory products offered in the market. Third, to the extent, and we know this is true particularly in the east side of St. Paul, North Minneapolis, and some other areas of Dakota County, and some places in greater Minnesota, increased foreclosures affect the community surrounding or in the areas where the foreclosures are occurring. There's a lot of vacant and perhaps blighted properties. And that is a community-wide issue that we need to pay attention. So I think we need to be really careful and conscious as we look at this foreclosure issue to have targeted responses to specific identified problems. And Minnesota Housing will be a partner with those who are working on this effort.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, sorry to interrupt you, but I think this might be a good place to ask on this specific issue. If you could tell the committee what resources are now available at the Minnesota Housing Agency for families who are experiencing foreclosure.
Through appropriations of funds provided by this legislature, we have an organizational support program that funds what we call homeowner education and counseling services, where we contract with various nonprofit providers who, before they get a homeownership loan, have the opportunity to get very good counseling and financial literacy training about what product might be better for them, product might be best for them to meet their individual needs, and to counsel them away from some of the more exotic products, where individuals and households have gotten themselves in trouble and are confronting foreclosure. And I think as we look forward, we have to make sure that we have enough resources to make sure that people have the services available to them.
Well, this may precede your tenure there, but we have had actual investment in foreclosure and family foreclosure prevention project, and I think you still have some.
We still have that foreclosure prevention project.
Down, but
yeah. So, for example, we'll contract with the Lutheran Social Services, who will get Minnesota housing funds, and if a household calls and says they're behind a month on payments, they might get a short-term loan in order to meet that payment. So we do have that foreclosure prevention service as well.
I just want to alert the committee to that because it is a resource that I hope we will talk about in this committee some more. And it used to be quite a significantly more funded, highly funded than it is now. And I know in my own county, if a family has this problem and they don't call within the first week of the month, there's no money left. So we can talk about that more.
Yeah, we look forward to having that discussion once the budget information is available to us.
All right, thank you.
The next three slides, 13, 14, and 15, I'll just kind of summarize briefly. And the point of these slides is basically to show that Minnesota is a growing state. And we are one of the few states in the upper Midwest that is still growing. We're supposed to grow by about 1.35 million people, or 27%, by 2030. And with growth comes housing needs. And if you look at household growth, anywhere from a third to a half of that household growth are going to be in a category of low or moderate incomes, based upon historical trends and based upon future projections. And of those low-income households, the private sector may serve, through its own resources and its own devices, about a third to a half of the needs for their affordable housing, just through private market development, no subsidies available. The remainder are likely to need some form of assistance, broadly defined, if they are going to have decent, safe, affordable housing and a quality of life for themselves, and for the broad state quality of life to improve, it's very important that those individuals and those households and those families have decent, safe, affordable housing. So we're growing. A significant portion of that growth is in low and moderate income households, and about a third to a half of those households are going to need some type of assistance, again, broadly defined, in order to meet their affordable housing needs and improve their and the state's quality of life. And what I'd like to do is spend a moment on slide 16 right now and just talk broadly about what affordable housing means and can mean to other quality of life factors that the state and you as a legislature are concerned about. And there is growing evidence about how, if you have an affordably housed state and an affordably housed family, that these other quality of life impacts will be positively impacted. We know, for example, that if there is stable housing, that educational achievement is more likely to occur if people aren't increasingly mobile between school districts. We know that locational choice can influence a parent's choice of where they want to educate their child, and having locational choice to get the right school district, the right school for them, can be important educational outcomes. Better health. There is a slide in your packet that demonstrates that a person and a household that is more affordably housed has less hospitalizations, is more healthy. And we can also pay attention to how we build housing to make sure that it is healthy, particularly for low-income households who often have significant respiratory diseases and other things because of the challenges they've had throughout their life. If we build healthy housing, that will result in healthier outcomes for them and lower health care costs. As I talked about earlier, much of our transportation problem is also a housing problem. And to the extent we use land more efficiently, and to the extent we locate housing near where transit and transportation and jobs are, the ability and need for the state to continue to invest as significantly as it is in its transportation infrastructure can be controlled and moderated somewhat, and the budgets of families can be positively impacted. Fiscal responsibility. Again, we know that if we develop in a more efficient basis and use our infrastructure more wisely, we can control some of the costs that we incur for new infrastructure. Environmental quality and energy conversation. Again, going back to the transportation discussion, if we use land more efficiently, that means we are consuming less environmentally sensitive land and increasing environmental outcomes. If we develop our housing again near jobs and near transit, energy consumption growth can be controlled, and some of the energy goals, which I know this legislature and the governor are very concerned about, will more likely be met. A strong housing market and an affordably housed family is a more productive family that is more economically secure, as we talked about earlier, and we will have a healthier economy. So when we look at investments in affordable housing through the course of the next several years, I think it will be helpful for us as we work together to think about how can we invest these dollars and these resources to maximize the quality of life impacts in these other areas. Because, again, there is growing evidence that if we do it and do it well, we could have a healthier state with better transportation system and a more energy efficient and environmentally responsible state as well. And we look forward to kind of broadening that discussion with you over the course of the next several months. What I'd like to do now is shift the discussion to talk more about what Minnesota Housing does as a state agency. So I'm on slide 17 now. And we are a state agency that's been around for over 30 years. I'm only the fourth commissioner in that period of time. And our mission is to help meet Minnesota's needs for safe, decent, affordable housing and strong communities. We have five strategic goals that we're currently working on, and you'll be hearing more about as we talk over the course of this legislative session. We have a business plan to end long-term homelessness by 2010, and that has resulted in and partnered with other similar plans that Hennepin County and Minneapolis have announced, Heading Home Hennepin. Ramsey County and the City of St. Paul have their own plan to address homelessness. St. Louis County in Duluth, southeastern Minnesota, a lot of collaborations have now developed to really focus on the homelessness issue, and it's been very heartening to see that come together. Second, as I talked about, to increase minority homeownership. Third, to preserve our existing affordable housing stock. Next, to increase housing choices for working families and for Minnesota's workers. Those are the goals that we are seeking on a substantive basis. And finally, we know that if we're going to be successful at Minnesota Housing, we want to establish ourselves as a housing partner of choice so that developers and nonprofits and the faith community and business community who want to work with us need to know that we are user-friendly, that we try to eliminate as much bureaucracy and red tape as possible so that we can get the resources out the door to build housing for families as efficiently as possible. And that is a strong ethic we have at Minnesota Housing. Slide 18 is an organization chart for those who are challenged by such small print. Flip the page, and you can see a larger one on page 18. And Minnesota Housing is led by a board of directors that is appointed by the governor on staggered terms. The state auditor is an ex officio member of the board of directors, and we're organized basically into four divisions. We have housing, finance, and operations, where that is the financial structure of the agency. We are a very complicated financial institution that I will explain a little about later. Patricia Hippie is the deputy commissioner. As I talked about earlier, we have two housing program divisions. The home ownership division, Mike Haley is the assistant commissioner in the home ownership division, and Bob Odman is the assistant commissioner in the multifamily division. And those are our housing programs. We have a housing policy division led by Tanya Orr, the assistant commissioner who does most of our work up here at the legislature, who also directs our federal affairs and research function. And then we have a housing communications function, and Megan Ryan is our director of housing communications. So that is how the organization is laid out, and I'll talk a little bit more about our organization in a moment. Slide 20 gives you a sense of our program budget. And every 2 years, we adopt what is called an affordable housing plan. And what before you is a summary of our current affordable housing plan that is based on the federal fiscal year from October 1 of 05 and will run through 9/30, September 30th of 07. On the left is our sources of funds. And you see that our sources of funds projected over this two-year period total $1.3 billion. The majority of those funds are raised through our revenue bond sales, where we are able to access the capital markets on a tax-exempt basis. I'm on slide 20 right now. The second largest source of our funds are federal funds at 27%. We do get federal appropriations that are administered by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. We administer the housing tax credit as well as do contract management for HUD for much of the project-based Section 8 projects across the state. 14% of our funds are internally generated. We operate like a business. We have to make money in the private market, And when we do make money in the private market, we reinvest those funds for affordable housing programs. And 14% of our program budget is funds reinvested from our bond funds back into affordable housing programs. You'll note that state appropriations are the smallest percentage of our program budget at 8%, or for this biennium, about $105 million for both general fund and capital funding resources received through the bonding bill. Now, even though that's the smallest portion of our budget, in many ways it is the most important, or a very important aspect of our budget, because those resources go for the gap financing, the soft second mortgages that really help to make projects work. Putting together an affordable housing development is very complex, multiple streams of funding, and again, because of the affordability gap, in order to make a rental project work or a homeownership project work, we often need that soft second mortgage and those gap funds, and that is the primary purpose for which we use state appropriations. Over on the right-hand side of the chart,
Commissioner?
Yes.
Representative Stevenson.
Yes, Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Marks, I just had a question on when we're on that topic of the state appropriations, the 8% there. Are you going to break out at all how those funds are achieved, or are you just going over that? Madam Chair, let me just clarify. I know, and just as an example, I went to a housing meeting in my district about 3 weeks ago. One of the bullets that they had on there was, as we increase the cost of housing in the area, $1,000 per unit, we exclude 200 families from being able to afford that housing. My concerns are that some of the costs or some of the fees that are levied onto the general housing market in the name of affordable housing are actually excluding some of the members that we want to target. So my concern, and I was just wondering if you were going to get into any of the breakdown of the financing for that 8%, so we could get a clear look at that.
Madam Chair, Representative Stevenson, what we will do once we are have the governor's budget is be much more detailed about those appropriations and what programs they're being targeted for. But to respond more specifically to your question, I was very conscious earlier when I said a large portion of the households who are low or moderate income need some type of housing assistance. And housing assistance does not necessarily need to be cash assistance, because there are ways and regulations and zoning and various fees that are imposed on the housing system that have the exact impact that you were talking about. They increase the cost for low and moderate income families. So part of a good housing strategy is not only to provide reasonable appropriations to provide that gap financing, but also look at the regulatory framework and how we invest these funds on a combined basis from the state perspective to make sure that we are minimizing that regulatory impact to lower the cost of that housing. You're right on point with that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, continuing with regard to the uses of the funds, you'll see that, again, our home ownership program is the majority of where our resources go, 51%. The rental portfolio management, that is primarily contract management with HUD, is the next largest portion at 25%. Our rental programs that I'll talk about in more detail in a few minutes comprise about 16%. And 1% are other programs related to homeownership counseling, organizational support, and other functions that the agency runs. I'd like to turn now to slide 21. And what slide 21 demonstrates or shows is the major types of program activity areas that the agency runs and finances. Preventing homelessness and supportive housing, and developing homes for working families, homeownership loans, preservation, and resident organization support. What I'd like to do now is basically go through each major program area and tell you what that program area accomplishes, who it serves, and how it is delivered. Preventing homelessness and supportive housing, and these are the type of programs, for example, that are key to our business plan to end long-term homelessness. There are three programs, the Family Homeless Prevention Program, which is an award-winning program where we try, if a family or individual shows up in a shelter or has a housing crisis or they're threatened with homelessness, we try to find an alternative right away before they end up in the homelessness system and are there for long periods of time. The Housing Trust Fund provides rental assistance to very low-income households, and the Bridges Program is a specific program that provides rental assistance to those who experience mental illness, and we work that program in cooperation with the Department of Human Services. And again, these programs provide rental assistance, temporary housing assistance, and capital assistance for housing projects. I think it is very telling to note that the median annual income of those that are served in these programs are $10,000. $10,000, very, very low-income households. And again, Minnesota Housing is a financial institution, is a bank, and we work through nonprofits and developers and others to provide our resources for various programs. The next slide is developing homes for working families. The primary program that we use for our basic workforce housing product is the Economic Development and Housing Challenge Program. And this is financed projects throughout the state, part of the city in Burnsville, the series redevelopment in Minneapolis, at home in Duluth, projects throughout the state to help meet their affordable housing needs. And this is that 0% deferred loan financing that is very important to combine with various sources of amortizing financing to make the project work. This program is very effective at leveraging other private resources. It's called a challenge program because it is a challenge to employers and to local governments and the other communities to match as much as possible with their resources as an opportunity then. If they provide resources, they will get increased state resources. And again, those who it serves are those who are about 50% of statewide median income or below. Again, our state's working families. And we work with local governments and for-profit and non-profit developers throughout the state for both homeownership and multifamily projects to provide this housing resource.
I'm wondering if you would just let the committee know what those numbers might be below 50% of statewide median. What are we talking about here in terms of?
Yeah, the statewide median income is in the metro area, statewide is about $67,000. In the Twin Cities, it's about $77,000. So 60%, which is a lot of where these programs are targeted, are from the $40,000 to $46,000 area. So at 50%, you're in the $40,000 range. That's a good estimate to kind of peg where these numbers are at.
Thank you.
Slide 24 describes our homeownership loan product. And again, we provide below market financing and other financial assistance to allow first-time home buyers to get into their homes. And that is a very important product, and the median income of households that we serve with this product is $40,000. And again, we are a secondary market. So a large lender network throughout the state of Minnesota, consisting of the major financial institutions to smaller financial institutions, originate our loans, and we buy them from them with our product. And that's how we work it with our lender delivery network. Slide 25 shows what this really means for a home purchase price of $200,000, which is close to the statewide median. With a market rate loan, the annual income needed to get into a $200,000 home is $60,200. We can get a family into that home, again, with our mortgage financing product and enhancements to a family with $50,000 income. And that is a real value to that first-time home buyer to be able to get into a home and build equity at an income of $50,000. Slide 26 is really an example of a family, the Dixons, in North Minneapolis, who did receive that type of financial assistance. And there's a newspaper article about the Dixons in your packet. And this is an African-American family in North Minneapolis that has now had the opportunity to buy their first home because of the agency resources and support provided by this legislature. and we're very proud, and it's very heartening to see families get into their first homes with these type of products. The next slide, page 27, talks to our preservation activities. And we provide both deferred and amortizing loans so that people have the opportunity to fix up their homes. It is much more cost effective to fix up a home than to see it be dilapidated and have to build new affordable housing. And this also incents other types of neighborhood improvements and other improvements in the home when we provide one of our loans, and we target it to the very low incomes. And again, we deliver this product through a delivery lender network, and many for the rehabilitation program are through small nonprofits, community action programs that originate this resource for us. And we give an example on page 28 of Julia, who is a senior citizen in South Minneapolis, who thought she needed a roof, and she got into the services of one of our nonprofit delivery partners, and also discovered that she had a significant furnace problem, and as a result, she got a new roof, a new furnace. And this senior citizen was allowed, at a very low cost, deferred financing that will not be due until the home is sold, to remain in her home. And this accomplishes multiple policy objectives. It kept a senior citizen in her home and out of a nursing home. It helped preserve a homeowner in a neighborhood that would provide that neighborhood stability. And these are the type of programs that we really think are important to work, because it accomplishes multiple objectives from a statewide perspective. The other program that is the final program that I'd like to talk about is our residential and organization support activities. There are a lot of infrastructure needs that are important to deliver affordable housing, and we, through our nonprofit and lender delivery network, provide homeowner education and foreclosure prevention counseling, as we talked about earlier, Madam Chair. We also support regional governments and local governments and regions coming together to kind of plan and identify from a regional and local perspective what their affordable housing needs are, so they can develop proposals and programs that match best with state resources. We also support various nonprofit operating costs, so they can go out and provide technical assistance to developers, both for-profit and non-profit and faith-based communities, again, so that they know how to access well the housing resources that are available to them. In addition, these type of programs fund the Wilder Research Center's triannual homelessness survey. Every 3 years, the Wilder Foundation does a comprehensive survey of homelessness in Minnesota, on which we, the state and local governments, rely to plan homelessness services, to develop plans to end homelessness, and it's a very important piece of work, and that will be forthcoming later this year in terms of the results of the 2006 survey. And again, we try to keep, through HousingLink and other sources, information available to low and moderate income families in terms of the overall market that is available in terms of affordable housing resources and opportunities. We know where the vacancies are, we know what Section 8 opportunities are available, and try to keep that the information out there in the marketplace. The final slide, and you can turn it to see a larger portion on slide 30. The last page is a larger slide. One of the things that I think the Minnesota housing community is particularly proud of is how we use the resources that have been provided to us through the legislature, through the federal government, and through all of the other partners and philanthropic organizations that fund affordable housing, to really target our resources to the most in need. So you'll see, for example, that the renters that we serve have incomes of about $10,000 to $11,000. That is a very low income. That is just below the poverty level. You'll see the home buyers that we serve are in the $37,000 range. Again, far below the median income for Minneapolis and St. Paul, or even the statewide income. And so we make a concentrated and targeted effort at Minnesota Housing to target those most in need, because that is the population that is struggling the most, that is the most potentially vulnerable, and we think it's important to target your resources to where the need can be best identified. Just a couple of final comments about Minnesota Housing. As I mentioned before, we are a large financial institution. We have assets of about $2.8 billion in our bond funds. If ranked as a statewide financial institution, commercial institution, we'd be the sixth largest bank in Minnesota. We have about 200 employees, fewer FTEs, about 190 FTEs, and our operating budget is about $20 million. And again, we don't look to the legislature or any other government source to fund that. We self-fund ourselves by running our various programs in the private market. Again, I've been commissioner now just about 4 years, and there's been a significant bipartisan support for affordable housing and investments in affordable housing that has yielded tangible results and helped to build a strong community and collaboration throughout the state that does its best and does very well at meeting the affordable housing needs of the state. We look very much to working with you, with this committee and the legislature, to try to continue to meet those needs and look for new and different ways, particularly as we talked about earlier, how housing can relate to other important issues that affect the state's quality of life in healthcare, environment, and transportation, and education. We can be very strategic in how we use these resources to accomplish multiple objectives, and we look forward to that opportunity to work with you. With that, Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. And committee members, we have the rest of the time for discussion with the commissioner here, so we will have plenty of time for that. I wanted just to take care of two little pieces of business. One is just the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting.
Madam Chair, I've moved minutes for 16th of January.
Okay, Representative Stevenson moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted and the minutes are approved. Okay, let's have discussion. And before we leave the room, actually, I do want to make sure we introduce, we have two new pages today, I believe. So why don't we, could you each stand up and just introduce yourself, please? Don't be shy.
I have to go.
Okay.
My name is Annette Hart. I'm from Minnesota.
Welcome, Annette. Okay, and actually, I think Representative Medor, you were missing yesterday, and we didn't get that. We went around and did introductions. You just introduce yourself to maybe so they know a little bit more about you.
Yeah, I had a transportation meeting, so it's very interesting today. We're hearing transportation and housing are tied. I'm Shelley Medor. I'm from 37A, Apple Valley, Burnsville. This is my first term, and I'm very, very interested in this topic, so I'm very excited to be a part of the committee.
Thank you. Okay, questions, comments?
Representative Kahn. Madam Chair and Commissioner, I represent the North Metro area of Blaine, mm-hmm. and so I'm very familiar. I mean, when you said that transportation is really maybe an issue and that we have affordable housing in the metro area, and we definitely have some in the outstate area, I wonder if you can speak to the new construction that you talked about. I mean, I guess from my experience, a lot of the new construction is, in my area, is not necessarily affordable. And so I'm curious if there's incentives or if there's, you know, what does new construction of affordable housing look like, especially in the suburban ring?
Madam Chair, Representative Kranz, I think you really hit upon an important point, that a lot of the new construction is not at the affordable level for those who are 60% of median income or below. A recent analysis that we worked on with the Metropolitan Council and looking at the region's affordable housing needs said that we need to have 51,000 new units of affordable housing, affordable to those at 60% of median income or below, by the year 2020. And it is going to be very important that we work with communities like Blaine as they plan Blaine's growth to make sure that there are affordable housing opportunities made available so that job growth in Blaine, there can be housing affordable to those who are going to be working in those jobs to minimize the burden on our transportation system. And that is in part a local issue in how we zone and how wide we require the streets, whether we allow more density, whether we allow designs that aren't large lot all of those various issues, which Representative Stevenson was talking about as well, that drive up the cost of housing. And we at Minnesota Housing have resources that can provide incentives so that because housing is expensive, we can provide incentives and gap financing to lower those costs. But unless we address those other regulatory issues, we can't subsidize it enough. There's not enough money to subsidize it. So we have to address the other side of the coin as well. In addition to how we use housing resources, I think it's also important to look at how we use economic development, transportation, and other resources that are utilized by local government to manage their growth so that we coordinate their use to achieve specific outcomes so that we know what we're buying as a state in terms of housing, transportation, environmental, and health outcomes. We can do a much better job of that, and I hope in working with this legislature we can identify specific ways to accomplish that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam.
Okay. Representative Benson.
Madam Chair and Commissioner Marks, I live in the city of Minnetonka, and that city has an ordinance that requires the 20% of new construction, rental construction, has to be affordable housing. I have a couple questions. Are you aware of that program or that ordinance? How widespread is it among other cities in the metro area or outstate Minnesota? And does it hit the target that we're looking at here, or is affordable housing as defined by cities like Minnetonka above median income still?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I know that Minnetonka has been a real leader in trying to address the affordable housing needs of that part of the region. I'm not familiar with that specific ordinance, but I know a number of communities have considered or have ordinances like that, again, in order to meet affordable housing need. There's sometimes this controversy associated with them because it is viewed as too much of a mandate, but it is one strategy in the toolbox that if you can get consensus that it is an appropriate strategy, it can be very effective in helping to incent developers and others to help in a public-private partnership meet affordable housing need. And so as the legislature and we work together to try to identify how to work with local governments and developers to meet these needs, that is something that merits consideration.
I have a follow-up. Has that type of proposal ever surfaced here at the legislature to have some kind of a state mandate, for example, or incentives of some kind for local government to begin or to expand those kinds of ordinances?
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, I know prior to my becoming commissioner, there was a inclusionary housing study that was sponsored by the legislature, and Tanya Orr, here is the as the legislative liaison, could provide more details to you, probably that at a later point, but there is some background and history to the development of this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Benson, I just want to say that I was here through some of that discussion, and I think it would be wonderful to invite your city's housing directors to come and talk with us about that, because it was very controversial, and if it's working in Minnetonka, it probably can work a lot of other places. It would be very interesting to have that discussion. So let's try to put that on our agenda, and I just want to extend that attention, that the invitation to other members, too, as you have programs that are working in your community or that are not working. Which, as you mentioned, Representative Krantz, let's just try to see if we can't get some of the local partners come in and have a chance to talk with us about it. Representative Swales.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Martin, I am curious about what is your relationship with the Metropolitan Council, and when you talk about planning and preparing for trends, do you interface with them and project what is needed in terms of housing, and particularly housing and transportation?
Madam Chair, Representative Swales, we have a very strong working relationship with the Metropolitan Council. For example, that study that I referred to that projected regional housing needs to 2020, we worked with them on that study so that we could have a consensus from a statewide perspective what the regional affordable housing needs are. The Metropolitan Council has what's called the Livable Communities Program, a part of which is a local housing incentive program. And when they meet out that fund for various housing projects, they cooperate with us in a joint funding process to provide funding to meet regional affordable housing needs. And we have been involved with the Metropolitan Council as well as the Department of Employment and Economic Development in working on a policy academy sponsored by the National Governors Association, where the agencies started to come together to figure out how can we better coordinate our resources to meet the housing, transportation, and job growth needs of the state. But that is a work in progress, but we have a very strong, close, and collaborative relationship with the Metropolitan Council.
Yeah, I have Representative Anderson, Medora, and Peterson. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Marks, you mentioned preservation activities, and you referenced Ms. Julia from South Minneapolis, and that I'm looking back on your charts here. Is that part of the home improvement program that would come out of as far as improving? And my question is does your department have any type of a survey on houses like this situation? I see this terrible looking furnace in this picture, and I'm wondering how many homes are like that in the metropolitan area, and your earlier referenced regulations that the state has put in place, and it makes it costly to put in place some of these upgrades and things like that. But I'm wondering if we have a survey of what these sick houses or these homes that are in bad need of upgrading, that is there any type of information regarding that?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not familiar with any kind of statewide survey of the housing stock. Many times local communities, in conjunction with their code enforcement division or their fire safety department, might conduct inspections of various parts of the community and discover that there are significant areas and homes in an area that have problems like the one that you refer to. And what we like to do is encourage communities to conduct such surveys, to use their local regulatory authority, in part in conjunction with some state authority there may be. We're not a regulatory agency, so we don't get into that area. But what we do encourage is local communities to develop those type of inspection programs and then access our resources as well as other local resources to go in and do the type of preservation like that home in Minneapolis.
The follow-up, Madam Chair?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. We mentioned yesterday, I think, I don't know if it was Representative Swales or somebody mentioned about sick homes in the metropolitan area that we have, and we have a lot of them. I have in the area of Buffalo where I represent, and in Monticello, homes that have problems with moisture and stuff and mold and things happen like that. Do you guys give loans to low-interest loans or low homeowner loans to people who have that need? I'm looking at people who are looking for help because they've just, in the last 6 to 8 years, purchased a brand new home, but all of a sudden, because of the materials that were put in and the regulations, they now have mold problems. I'm just wondering if you have, do you give that kind of a loan?
Yeah, and Madam Chair, Representative Benson, we do have a fix-up fund that is an amortizing loan product that is available for situations like that. It is targeted to those households who have low and moderate incomes, and that is a very significant and important issue where some of the new construction has been so tight that there has been mold problems that have developed. But we do have products available for that type of situation. The issue is whether the individuals in those homes would meet the income targeting criteria.
Okay, thank you.
I might mention, I think I mentioned this to you, to Commissioner, but I sent it to the committee, that we are going to have a subcommittee on healthy homes, and Representative Anderson, you might want to be on it. Those of you who are interested, please talk with Brooke about that. We haven't constituted it yet, but it'll be coming pretty soon. And we hope we can actually create some, perhaps additional products that will be available to you, if need be. Maybe other agencies. Okay, Representative Medora.
Excuse me. Chair, My question, I actually two questions I'd like to ask. The first one is Commissioner, I'm concerned about the 40-year term.
Mm-hmm.
My issue with that is that I'm assuming that most of the folks that we're targeting here for some of these loans are in their 30s or early 40s as the family has identified itself, and perhaps it's moving out of some low-income jobs and moving along there. And saddling a 40-year-old with a 40-year mortgage seems a little extreme to me. Is that a worrisome thing that... trying to ask this in a way, it just seems that that's not really allowing people to build equity fast enough. Should their incomes at that point progress and they'd like to sell this home and move to another community, a 40-year mortgage, they really have not had an opportunity to build a lot of equity in that home, which then impacts their ability to move up in the market. So is this an issue with expanding these creative plans that really are locking people into low-income housing instead of allowing them that foot up to move on?
Madam Chair, Representative, the vast majority of our mortgages are still 30-year mortgages. But in order to provide homeownership opportunities to more people and at lower incomes, we have introduced a 40-year product. And along with that, we make sure that it is a good decision, that the homeowner knows exactly what they're getting into with that product. But without moving in that direction, for some families, homeownership just wouldn't be an opportunity for them. The good news part of it is that many of our loans really prepay before the 40-year term in 7 to 10 years, and they have been able to build up some equity, and hopefully their incomes have increased. And so really, by getting them in sooner to a home that allows them to build that equity, even though it's a 40-year mortgage, they're better off than they would have been had they not been able to get into a home in the first place. And so we're very conscious of the trade-offs that exist with moving for a portion of our loans to a 40-year product, because you've raised a legitimate concern. And what we try to do is work with lenders to make sure that we have good underwriting criteria and good counseling for those homeowners that are put into that product.
Thank you for that, Madam Chair. I would like to know what percentage of people actually are successful with this. What's your foreclosure rate on these 40-year plans or these longer plans for these families?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, we just introduced this product a few months ago, so it is a new product, and we're monitoring it very closely because of the concerns that you have addressed. And overall, Minnesota housing's foreclosure rate is very, very low, 0.24%. And in terms of our portfolio, is not a significant concern in terms of the states or our foreclosure situation. We have a very good foreclosure record, again, because we concentrate on good underwriting, good homeownership counseling, moving towards successful homeownership.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let's see, Representative Peterson, then we'll come to you, Representative Schumer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question on market trends, rental rates. I see in your slide 11, which is page 6, that report was done in the second quarter of 2006, and then I'm thinking about an article that came out just recently, I think it was the Minneapolis paper, again, using statistically what's happening with the lowering of vacancy rates, increasing of rents. And then I couple that with the report in the St. Paul paper today talking about St. Paul needing to enforce more housing inspections on rentals. Help me equate those. What can you do? How flexible are you in rental surges like that, because that continues to be for some time? And can you adapt your programs? Do you flex with that? What do you do?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, our programs and our financings are very market-based. And so to the extent there are areas of the state where vacancy rates might be higher, and that is in some areas of greater Minnesota, we will not finance new affordable rental housing. We will instead encourage the market to do rehabilitation. So we respond to the market on that basis. One of the trends that we see is that there's often a disconnect between vacancy rates where rents are higher, the higher end of the market, and the lower end of the market, and vacancy rates do tend to be lower at the lower end of the market, which says we do need to keep enough production out in the market, particularly where a market is growing, so that those working families do have affordable rental opportunities. And in the homeownership area, again, in areas of the state where the market is softening because of the single-family market slowing down, we will focus our resources then more on rehabilitation in order to respond to that market. So we're a very market-driven place, and as a part of our underwriting, make sure that there are market studies associated with our products. But the basic point is the state and the region are continuing to grow, and a portion of that growth will be in the low and moderate income market. And so we have to keep the wheels of production growing, as well as monitor rehabilitation needs so that we have preservation and new construction to try to have a healthy market.
If you want to follow up, and I'm guessing you probably won't answer it today, we'll probably talk about it later, but again, the fact that many of the financing of housing projects that were done 30 years ago, the first ones, senior, low income, those are all coming off now. And as I understand it, those owner developers have the option now to take those to market rent, take them out of Section 8 pool or wherever they are, and that will have a major impact. In my community, we've got two or three buildings, sizable buildings, and that fit that formula. And I'm going to guess we'll be addressing some of those issues in this committee.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I neglected in the body of my comments to really emphasize that point. We have a specific state-appropriated program funded by the legislature for preservation to address that specific need, so that as a developer has an opportunity to go market rate, we provide some incentive that recapitalize the project, do some necessary rehabilitation, provide some equity takeout on occasion, and in turn, those developers commit to another 10, 15, 20-year affordability requirement, which then draws down the continuing housing assistance payments from the federal government. It's one of our best and most well-leveraged programs for drawing down and maintaining federal assistance and maintaining affordability.
Okay. Mr. Peterson?
Again, are we going to be... Can we address that later in a little more specifics?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm so glad you brought it up. I mean, this was a huge issue a few years back, and we did create a special program and project for it, and we probably should have some more discussion on that. Maybe even we'll have time today before we get through all the other questions. Well, the reason I want to maybe come back to that is, Commissioner, it might be helpful for this committee to hear how we're doing in terms of the need for this. I know that's a program that wasn't funded as richly, perhaps, as it should have been, and I think we have lost some units, and I'm not sure if you can tell us about that right off the top of your head, or maybe Ms. Orphan, but I know that we worked really hard to try to address that, because there's no way we could create those affordable housing units for those seniors again, that we couldn't afford to do it, and so preserving them is absolutely the best strategy. Do you want to say anything about how we're doing in terms of the need as compared to the resources your agency has to help deal with that?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, I'd like to get back to you with some more facts and data on that specific issue.
Okay.
I do think we, however, have a very good record at working with developers who are willing to be incented to provide those incentives to keep them in the federal program. And so many times it's not as much as not having enough resources. It's not having enough resources that make sense for that particular project and that particular developer. But that's something we'll provide more information to you on.
We can try to make sure we have a chance to set aside just for that. I think it would be good. Representative Shumpert.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, just a couple quick questions. The first one is sort of a follow-up on Representative Medora's question. On your home ownership loans, are they structured that people can take early, pay off with no penalty?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes.
They are. Okay. And the other one, on page 28 here, talking about this loan to this lady, Julia, those loans are paid off at the time of the sale of her property? Doesn't that mean you're carrying a lot of loans a long period of time? Can you? That sounds like a huge amount of money, just thinking about it quickly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, that's exactly right. And those are loans that we could not make but for the state appropriations that you provide. We have two types of loans in our portfolio, ones that we finance through money we access in the capital markets, and those are below market, but they're still amortizing. We have to pay those bondholders back, which means we have to get income back from the homeowners or the multifamily developer. The other loans that are many times very low interest or zero interest are ones that we fund from our own earnings or largely from state appropriations. And it is those loans that we fund from state appropriations that allow Julia to fix her furnace and fix her roof at great financial terms that is deferred. Now, those will eventually come back, or most of them, when the houses are sold, and we recycle those funds back into the same type of products. So it's a good long-term investment for the state. We really prefer loans, even if deferred, and even if deferred for a long time, over grants, because we get those resources back and let them out for the same purpose.
Yeah. Okay.
Other questions? Comments from committee members? Well, Commissioner, I just have maybe just one quick question here. If you were to say to us what is your biggest challenge in terms of the state appropriated dollars and our ability to actually work with you for the needs of our affordable housing, what would you suggest? Or are you able to talk before the governor's budget comes out?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative and members, I think this would be a more fact-filled discussion once the governor's budget is available, to be able to put it in context and what the governor is proposing and what we propose to do based upon the input from this committee and others. The state has gone through a fiscal crisis for the last two biennia. The Housing Finance Agency budget from state appropriation sources did suffer some setbacks. However, again, that is 8% of our total appropriated budget. And for a period of time, we were able still to do a lot of significant housing work by utilizing those other resources. And as we emerge from this fiscal crisis, hopefully we'll be able to identify other resources that will help us get back on track or on track for a continued strong housing record.
Okay, great. And I did, committee members, I did ask the commissioner when he comes back to take us back down the budget trail of what we did have with the Housing Finance Agency before the 203 cuts. So we'll get that in our next presentation, I believe. Let's see. Are there any other questions from members or comments for the commissioner? Okay, I just want to encourage you to consider this agency a very good resource to work with. I do know one area. We just talked privately very briefly about it. I wish you would say a little bit about what the agency's interest in this might be. And the reason I want to bring this up is because this is going to be one of our subcommittees, and that's the whole area of healthy housing and green housing. If you could just talk a little bit about some of the agency's endeavors or visions in terms of that work.
Madam Chair, members, again, how we do housing can really impact healthcare outcomes and can impact environmental outcomes, both narrowly for the type of housing that we develop and more broadly for housing fits in, how housing fits into broader developments. Whether there is, it's a walkable neighborhood and whether it's near transportation and transit alternatives. But we do have incentives, and as we underwrite and finance projects, we do look at the overall product that is being developed so that it will advance environmental objectives by giving a priority for programs and housing developments that do meet environmental objectives. And as well, although it's not explicit right now, it's something I think we can look at, is what type of healthy housing initiatives or priority are given to specific projects. In many of our projects, for example, we don't have carpet. We have other types of ventilation systems and other things, again, because many low-income people, because of the challenges they have had in their lives, have significant respiratory issues. And we want to make sure the housing is safe, and so we work with our architects and developers to have a product that is safe for that population. And we would be more than happy to talk about how we can align our resources to achieve those objectives without putting mandates on the financing and the various financing sources that are a disincentive to developers and local governments from using the resources.
Just a quick question. When you said healthy housing, I had the privilege of serving on the Met Council under Jim Solem, who was your predecessor for many years in housing and through multiple administrations. And the relationship with Minnesota Housing Finance and this legislature has been a healthy relationship, and I'm looking forward to preserving that.
Thank you. Very significant comment. Okay, well, committee members, I think we'll let our commissioner go here. I just want to thank you very much, Commissioner, and you're welcome. The door is open, certainly, to my office, and I'm sure to the members' offices. I've been asked to indicate, those of you who want to save something, please put it in the folder that says save. Otherwise, what's in your folder will be recycled. And with that, we'll be coming back next week, and our overview will be from the Department of Health. And we'll have a chance to look at their budget and go through that in more detail. Meeting is adjourned.